to be a really good Salesforce consultant and a partner, you should be deeply involved in the bigger community. So whether that means, yes, you're going to user groups or hosting them or writing blogs or on the Twitter or going to user groups or building Dream-Ins or doing whatever it is, like that is authentic to what Salesforce is. And I think it makes everybody better if people do that.
What's up, everyone? This is Ankit from Forcepreneur.com, and you're listening to the Forcepreneur podcast. On this show, I talk to founders of profitable Salesforce companies and try to get a sense of what it is to be an entrepreneur in Salesforce cosmos. How did it all start it, and how was the journey until now? How do they make decisions both in professional and personal life? Our goal here is to learn from their examples so that the rest of us can go on and build our own profitable Salesforce businesses. My guest today is no stranger to Salesforce. Actually, he might be one of the early adopters. It wouldn't be wrong to call him an OG. He is a Salesforce MVP, co-host of Cloud Focus Weekly podcast. He's a diehard fan of getting things done methodology. He's the co-founder of Arcus Inc., where he currently works as chief productivity officer. Hello, Jason. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to have you. Before we begin, how do people connect and follow you?
Sure. I'd say probably the two best channels in the internet are probably Twitter. So Jason M. Atwood on Twitter, which is the best place to connect with me. LinkedIn, of course. If you try to link in with me, just give me a reason why. Say, oh, I heard you on the podcast. That'd be great. And then obviously, if you're a Salesforce user and you're in the Salesforce community, the Trailblazer community, I'm in there as well. So I have a profile and you can link in and talk to me there as well. I think those are probably the best three places.
Great. So yeah. So tell us more about Chief Productivity Officer.
Sure. So Arcus, which I guess we'll talk about a little bit later, you know, one of our core values is productivity. And so a couple of years ago, we came up with the idea that sort of changing our titles from being, you know, sort of drab, I guess, to more going towards what we think about in terms of productivity. And since I am someone who's been doing productivity methodologies for, I think, 15 years now, I became the chief productivity officer. You know, it was more of a fun kind of way of kind of spinning it, you know, if you had to ask me what I really do, I'm really the COO. So there's three founders of Arcus, and each of us kind of split up the tasks, as you were. So I'm more of the operations person, but I also do a lot of the productivity within Arcus.
Fair enough. Like operations, managing operations is kind of making sure everything falls into place and the whole machinery kind of runs. It fits perfectly. Yeah. So tell us about Arcus and what were you doing just before Arcus and how did you come in touch with Salesforce?
Sure. So as you said, my journey in Salesforce started a long, long time ago in a land far, far away. So I started with a startup company in the year 2000, and they were implementing Salesforce. And so I was their sort of IT person at the time. So I was helping set up servers and phone systems and building their website and just doing all sorts of random stuff. And we went with, as a small, tiny little startup, we went with Salesforce as our CRM. So I do say I've been using Salesforce or been in the Salesforce ecosystem for, I guess now 20 years as of tomorrow, right? 20 years. So, and then throughout my journey and my life, I've worked at some massive financial institution companies where I was part of a team that was part of the largest, at the time, one of the largest licensing deals ever. So I've been a massive enterprise customer. I've also run smaller companies where I'm a user of one. So I've had a one person org, and I had that org for I think over 10 years. And then, you know, towards the 2008-09, there was some crisis going on here and in the financial markets. And so we were part of, again, part of a sort of a center of excellence at this big financial firm, which I don't generally say the name of. We have a joke on the podcast. We say it's the company that shall not be named. So we decided to, you know, take our show on the road and take sort of our experience and our connections with Salesforce, our longstanding, you know, friendships and stuff and really start up a consulting firm. So we started Arcus in 2010, which now we're almost coming up on, almost on 10 years.
All right. So interesting. First, do you have any screenshots from Salesforce from the year 2000? I would just like to see what the UI was. I mean, those are the days of S objects, right?
Yeah. I mean, it really looked like ACT. Like I've gone back. I don't know if I personally have some screenshots, but I've looked them up and found them. It really did look like ACT at the time. It was just, a bunch of tabs, somewhere between ACT and Amazon. Remember how Amazon used to have those curved tabs? That's what it used to look like. And it was like contacts, opportunities, accounts, and very, very basic. I mean, colorful, very, very colorful and very basic at the time. It was ACT on the web, if I'm gonna say anything.
Interesting. Okay. So Arcus Inc., do you guys specialize in one, because you said your background is in financial services. So do you do all kind of consulting, or is it very focused?
Yeah. So sort of fast forwarding 10 years of Arcus, we started with the three founders, and we're now up to around 35 employees, and we are, we're an SI partner in two ecosystems. So on the for-profit and the nonprofit side, which is kind of where, I guess, the spin of our life has gone. We are only a Salesforce consulting shop. We don't do anything else. We don't do Google. We don't do whatever, Amazon or any other kind of language. And we stick within pretty much, I say we're more than 50% of our business now is running through nonprofits. And then less than 50% is running somewhat in the financial industry, financial services, community banks, but also a lot of sort of mid-market and enterprise customers. Sometimes enterprise customers who, use the big consulting firms, they sometimes want people who are a little bit more agile, a little bit easier to engage with, and don't have to sort of come in and, do massive projects. We can come in and do sort of tactical, we like to call it like black ops. We come in and do a tactical project in and out, as opposed to signing a 10-year, $10 million consulting engagement.
Nice. I call it more like mercenary work. So sometimes I work as a freelancer right now, and sometimes I get projects where something didn't go right, or during a project in one of those big companies, somebody fell sick and they want to hire me and like hit the ground running. So it's more like coming in as a mercenary and just going in there and getting it done. And it's fun. I mean, it's a different kind of job, but I like to do it once or twice a year, but I would not do it very often. So 35 people, are you spread across whole United States, or you're just in New York, if I'm not wrong?
Yeah, so our headquarters are here in New York, actually in Times Square. But we are a work from anywhere kind of company. So all employees at Arcus work wherever they want to work, really. So we have people spread all over the country, from everywhere from Maine to Texas to Florida to California to Michigan. I mean, it's everywhere. And that's part of our, part of our policy and part of our sort of work environment, is everybody is a remote worker, and kind of works at the time and when they need to work, which kind of creates a nice work environment.
Very good. Interesting. So we should go a little deep on that one. So how do you keep everyone connected and on the same page? Like, do you have like Tuesdays? I listened to a podcast from the founder of Balsamiq, this drag and drop thingy Balsamiq, which can be used to draw wireframes. They're also a remote team. And he said Thursdays are usually a day where everybody has to just log in and be online, so that they have one this regular day. So how do you manage that? Do you have something like this?
Sure. So in the suite of tools we use, you'll be shocked to hear that we use Salesforce for pretty much, 85 or 75% of all the work. So all sales, all invoice management, project management, and goal tracking, basically a very customized Salesforce org, is where most of work happens. So we use the collaborative tools around Salesforce, obviously Chatter. And then we also use other tools. So we use tools like Slack as a way of communication, instant communication. And we also use the G Suite. So for documentation and for client data storage and for things like that. So we try to keep it to those sort of big three, I guess, if you will. And then from a collaboration standpoint, we have a methodology that we built that really it kind of shows where everybody is and what they're doing. Everybody works very independently. They work on their projects with their clients. But there's a way that we have that's a sort of in the middle way. We call it a scrum. It is based on a scrum, but it's not a traditional agile scrum where everybody can see what everybody else is doing. So it's kind of like you don't have to ask what someone's doing. You can just go in and look at their scrum to see what they're doing. So that's how we kind of collaborate around the work. And then we collaborate around, you know, personality and people and stuff like that in Slack. And that's been pretty good. It keeps everybody, you know, connected in a social way, you know, having that virtual water cooler, if you will. And that's sort of where Slack falls in. And then all the collaboration around client work and all that happens in the Salesforce G Suite kind of realm.
Interesting. And I'm sure you do once or twice a year, like Dreamforce visits or team outings to do the team building activity, because I think that's also important to hang out with each other.
Yeah, absolutely. We try as a company to get together 2 or 3 times a year. We do get together regionally, but not as the whole company, but we do try to get together at least 2 or 3 times a year as a company so everybody can, you know, get face to face. And it is funny because sometimes we've hired somebody and they'll have worked with somebody for 6 months and they haven't, you know, seen them. So then it's like they come in like, hi, and there's big hugs and, you know, nice to see you. We finally meet you in person. You know, remote working it's not easy. You definitely have to put an effort on it. You can't just sort of set everybody up and say, go for it. It definitely takes both, the company has to sort of embrace it, allow people to actually work remotely and independently. And that's why we don't have any rules around, we have no standing meetings at Arcus. I don't require anybody to be anywhere at any time. Everybody works when they work and we kind of look towards the results of their work, not sort of what they're doing. So it's something called ROW. It's results oriented work environment. And it's really about focusing on the outcome of what people do, not about, you know, did you take a day off? Did you go to the doctors? You know, did you pick up your kid from school? So it changes the way you look at your engagement with the people at the company. And it's not for everybody, I'll definitely tell you, but it is, but for some people, it creates a great atmosphere where they have a lot of independence and kind of can work from and when they want to.
Nice. Companies are embracing remote work also in Salesforce itself, like their developer evangelists are all over the place. So coming to the next question, again, from the remote work, I want to keep on this. So was it always the policy of having this remote work? And when you started the company, because the times were not good, I see from LinkedIn, it started around 2010. So, you know, the people like you were still recovering. And at that time, did you still have remote work, or is this something that came over the years? Or yeah,
it's really something we built into the DNA of the company. So it's always been there. Just sort of, and I know we'll get into the productivity stuff. I know you're going to dig into that later. But sort of the main things as we started the company and worked together, the three of us, we wanted to build this as the way for the people to work. So what's funny is we worked remotely even as the three of us, because we weren't physically located anywhere near each other. So, you know, two in New York and one was in New Jersey. So even at the start as founders, we would kind of come in and get together a little bit and we'd meet up in hotel lobbies. That's where our first offices were hotel lobbies. But then we would disperse and we'd work remotely. So even back then we would use tools like Google Wave, which doesn't exist anymore, to collaborate and stay with each other, but also work remotely. And partly came about because we want that for us. You know, it's sort of the founders build what the founders want. And so we wanted a work environment that we could work from anywhere. I'm currently at home. I love working from home. I love the freedom of it. I love the ability to control my own schedule. I don't like, you know, I didn't like the 10 years I worked at a financial institution where all they did was pound me with meetings that were useless and where I just sat around and, you know, we had status updates on projects that were going nowhere and wasting millions of dollars. So it was nice to sort of when we level set Arcus, we said we're going to build in some of these core principles that we like, and one of them is remote work and, you know, independence and things like row. We didn't have a word for it, so we kind of, like anybody would do, we Googled it. Like, let's find a policy. Actually, and some of the things we really picked came from Netflix. Actually, Netflix has some of these, and they published. There's a big presentation that they published about all of their work policies and how they, you know, have unlimited vacation days and how they do all this stuff. And so we kind of went into that and picked out pieces that we thought would fit Arcus. So it's always been there.
So what have been your top three challenges running a Salesforce company, and how did you overcome them?
Sure. So I would say, top three really is, we started the company, we bootstrapped the company. So, you know, we didn't get outside investors. We didn't have someone, you know, no angels, no joint ventures, nothing like that. I say the first and the hardest part of running a company, especially when you're bootstrapping it, is cash management. That is, you know, people don't want to talk about it, but if you go read books, and I've read tons and tons of books on entrepreneurship and running small companies, and since I am sort of in the COO, I do all the finance and stuff like that, you know, running the cash and being able to grow and, you know, maintaining that is the number one thing. So if you're a business, you're starting up, go pick up three or four books on cash management, running your books, projection, forecasting, because that's where most companies, small companies, die. It doesn't matter Salesforce or not. So that'd be one. And the second is really growth. The hardest piece of our business has been growth, and it's really growing appropriately. So it's not, we can grow however we want to, but it's, do we grow appropriately for the company, for the culture, and still maintain and give the service that we want to, you know, the success we want to for our clients? If I go and hire 100 people, is that really going to change the company and become very different? And are we going to grow responsibly? So that, I think, is probably the second one. And then the third one that, you know, I don't know if it's more on the Salesforce side or just running a business. I think Mark Cuban has a quote about it, but it's really about choosing what not to do, right? When you're starting a company, there's just billions and billions and billions of things that you can do. We could do this. We could sell eggs. We could have a farm. We could do Salesforce. We could do Google. We could go to be Apex coders. There's so many opportunities. And I think putting on really good blinders and saying, do this thing, right? Pick the five things you want to do this year. So when, as we build Arcus and as we did this, we really spend a lot of time on choosing what not to do, right? Because there's so many opportunities every year. It's like, but let's not do that. And then be okay with not doing it, right? Just saying, we're going to focus on these five things this year, or these two things. And there's things that are gonna come up and you're going to do, but not going to try to handle everything and go after every little opportunity. We have been burned many, many times by trying to chase some little small opportunity down a rabbit hole. Generally, it's a Salesforce product, right? So they'll come up with a product. They'll be like, you consulting firm, you need to do this product. And we'll go, okay, is it, you know, why? And they're like, well, we need consulting partners to do it. Okay, let's get trained up on it. Let's build the process around it. Let's build the documentation. Let's go. And then, oh, we don't like that product anymore. We killed it off. Oh, thanks. Like, thanks for doing that to us. So we've got burned so many times, like three or four times in a 10-year period, chasing after one small product that Salesforce wanted us to. So my other advice to anybody getting into this industry, certainly in the consulting space, even SI or is take what you see as a grain of salt, and don't always chase after it, because the market's moving so fast, the technology's moving so fast, and it's hard to steer the ship around and to like chase after one thing. And I think you're going to get burned more often than not. So I would say hold back a little. Whenever they're telling you this is the next thing, give it a year and say, you prove to me it's the next thing. I'll pass on these five opportunities. Next year, show me that they were successful and you're still doing it. Because a lot of them are not. I mean, so many products we've chased after and that ended up being nothing, and just literally products that disappeared and are either no longer existing in the Salesforce ecosystem or are completely, or just didn't turn out to be very good.
As they say, less is more. So Arcus Inc. has been running for 10 years now. Can you please tell us what has been your year-on-year growth and what does the revenue look like right now?
Yeah, so we've grown about, I mean, obviously the first couple of years, I think I was watching some YouTube video the other day. It's like the first year of growth, it's easy to do growth. I earned $1 one year, and the next year I earned $1,000. Woo, look at all that growth. It's really sustained growth that's tough to do. We have been growing roughly 20 to 25% per a year. That's sort of, and that's by choice, because the market for Salesforce and Salesforce ecosystem and SIs and consulting partners is growing, you know, depends who you listen to. If you listen to Salesforce, it's growing 75 to 150% a year. I would say even if it's growing 50% a year, fine, but we've chosen not to grow that. So it's kind of, I like to explain, like we almost have the brakes on a little bit. We're choosing not to grow at the rate the market is growing because, we want to go back to A, not chasing down things, but also growing responsibly. So we're trying to stick to that nice, you know, growth. We want to be a bigger company. We like the, you know, we've grown over the 10 years, but we also don't want to just grow for growing sake because we think that the ramifications of that will be bad in the long term.
I want to ask actually a follow-up question on that. So how do you do that? Like, what's your customer acquisition model? Like, if new projects are coming to you, do you just say no?
Well, you have to pick the right business, right? So there's going to be tons of opportunities. This market is growing tremendously. It's an incredible ecosystem. You know, we're all involved in this community. We know, right? If they put up on Dreamforce, you know, 4.2 million jobs in the next 5 years. I mean, it's a massively growing ecosystem. So it's really about picking the right client. And in some ways, it's a strange analogy, but in some ways, it's kind of like dating. You kind of have to go on a small first date, right? You have to go with that client or that prospect at the time and make sure that they fit you, your company, right? It's kind of like being a small firm and working at a massive, massive enterprise company. We've, you know, while that's worked many times, there's many times it hasn't worked. And so sometimes learning when not to do a business based on the client, you go on that first date and, you know, you kind of look at them and go, I don't think this is a fit. Like you, a client or a prospect, are not a fit for us. We're not going to get along. And so learning when to not go on the second date, I guess, is the first thing. And then also learning when to break up. We use the terminology when we separate from our clients. And we have clients that I've had for 9 years. I have a handful that we just been with us for 9 years, some with 5 years. So we have clients that have been with us for a long, long time, and it's great. But those are the clients that we had to have conversations, hard conversations, and say, this is not going to work out for us, right? What you do and what you want and what we do and what we want, we're not thick, we're not melding here. So why don't we try to help you find another partner? Honestly, we always say that, hey, we'll find you another partner. There's lots of great partners out there. We're not the only partner. So here's two more. Maybe here's a really big one that can handle what you want it to do. Maybe here's a really small one who can be much more hands-on. But we're not always just going to change ourselves and go away from what we do just to satisfy the prospect or client. And that's the hardest part, because you are turning down business. You're saying, I do not want your money. Someone else can do that work for you. So that's sort of our policy on it.
Nice. I think that's very important. And I think it's very important to know also in life what you don't want, you know. And I had a similar situation. I was working for a client for 5 years, and I decided that I want to part ways now because I was not learning, I was not growing. And it was kind of complacent because, you know, when you work someplace for 5 years, it was just, you know, I was not enjoying it that much. And I found them a new freelancer who's motivated and, you know, who's ready to do the work. And yeah, it's not that I was not ready to do the work, but it's just I was not really learning something new over there. So how are your relationships with your local Ohana? So your meetups, or do you go to the Trailblazer meetings in New York? Do you host? Do you present?
All the above. So we're in a great office in Times Square, nice central location. So we host groups. We've hosted the New York Developer User Group more than a few times. We've hosted the Women in Tech group. And we leave it open for anybody else. If, you know, obviously just contact us and we have a nice big conference room. So we'll host that. We really encourage everybody who works at Arcus to really be involved in the community beyond and before even the Ohana word was thrown around, but just be involved in the community as a whole. So whether that's being involved in the App Exchange or being involved in the actual, again, we started Arcus before the actual community existed, before Trailblazer, before all that, but be involved. So we encourage everybody to, all the employees to go to events, to host, to go to speak at Dreamforces or Dreamins or World Tours, and also be involved in the community by giving back to it in the way of both running groups. So a lot of the people at Arcus run local groups or conferences. Even I think we have two or three employees that run these massive Dreamins. And so we highly encourage that, give them the time to do that, and also encourage people to, one of our things at Arcus is everybody blogs. So we have a blog at Arcus, blog.arcusinc.com, and we publish one to two times a week. And every employee has to write blogs and to give back to the community. So write up something you're interested in, whether it's a review of Florida Dreamin' or whether it's the new things coming out in NPSP, whatever it is, whatever floats your boat, but putting that back into the universe, right? Because that's how we all got started was, let me find a blog post that tells me how to pass the Pardot certification. Let me find a blog post that tells me what are record types? And that's a long time ago. One of the most hit ones on our blog is a review of all the different all the different developer tools. And so one of our employees wrote this big review of every developer tool and which ones were best. It got hit so much. And again, we're just giving that back to the universe. And that's sort of what we're trying to do. So that's sort of our involvement in the community.
Nice. And so writing is not everybody's piece of cake, you know. How do you come around that? Like, do you have people who also assist the other people in writing? I mean, that's a very good value to have. And I think everybody should be a multiplier. And this is the way, you know, sharing, you learn more. That's also what I have also seen. So how does that work?
I mean, how the process for the blog?
Yeah. Or
sure. I mean, it's pretty simple. It starts with people onboarding. Actually, it starts when we hire people. So it's right up front when we hire someone, we say, just by the way, this is a part of Arcus. Like, you know, everybody blogs. And so if you don't want to write blogs, then Arcus is probably not the place for you. So that's at the start. And then on the onboarding, we actually have them meet with the marketing, the head of marketing who runs the blog. And they meet and they talk through it. They walk through the document. They walk through why we blog. We walk through what are the categories we blog about. We walk through the process of the blog. But like most everything, it's a little collaborative. So people pick their topics and pick when they're going to blog throughout the year. They have goals on how many they need to write. And then they just put it on their calendar. Like, I'm going to write this week. And then when they write it, they share it out. They give everybody... I think it's like 5 days. So I just shared one. Actually, I just wrote one a couple days ago and I said, till the end of the week, just share it and say, hey, if anybody wants to comment on it, read it in advance. We have some really good ex-teachers who love to go in and make lots of edits. So we kind of collaborate together. And then once it's done, the marketing person goes and puts it through the system, puts it on the blog, puts it through the Twitter and all that sort of as part of the process. Well, one of the secrets to the blog, it's not a secret, but the other secret to the blog is that we're also training internally because we're writing about topics. We're also collaborating internally. So everybody's learning about whatever that person wrote about. So if they wrote about, you know, the top 20, you know, top five winter 20 release things are coming out, as people read it internally, they also learn about it. So then they go, oh, I didn't know that was coming out. And that's sort of the hardest part. You know, maybe if I add my number four for running a Salesforce consulting firm, one of the hardest part is keeping up with Salesforce, right? Keeping up with the releases, keeping up with the new technologies, keeping up with the new products, keeping up with the new certifications. It's a lot. And Trailhead can handle a percentage of that, but really getting to know these products and to know how to implement them and even know that they exist is very difficult. So a lot of what we do internally is about internal collaboration and internal education, because that's so important in this industry specifically.
Interesting. And I think this piece of information is gold, that by working on such blogs and collaborative, everybody comes on the same page and everybody learns about new tools. You've been running Arcus now for 10 years. How has your journey been? Are you satisfied? Are your goals met? And what would be your top three tips for budding forcepreneurs or people starting up?
Oh, all right. Well, breaking news, I'm not going to run Arcus anymore. No, I'm just kidding. I know some employees be listening going, what? No, it's been amazing. You know, my last gig I had was around 10 years, and it was at the 10-year part that I left to go to Arcus. But it's been amazing. I when I hire people and I recruit them, I really talk about Arcus as it's not just, you know, it's not just my income. It's not just as a thing that supports my family and my life. It's also just a place I like to work. So as I keep that, as I keep my thoughts to, and as the three of us, you know, think and make decisions around where the company's going and what we're doing, we always go with the, is this the place you want to work? So ultimately, I love working at Arcus. Like, not only do I run Arcus or, you know, and co-own Arcus, but I love working at Arcus. I love the people. I love the stuff we do. I love working with my clients. I still work hands-on. I have, you know, a handful of clients that I work with directly and have been doing that. I think I was looking at the numbers the other day. I've done something over 12,000, 13,000 hours of consulting. And I love it. I still love doing it. You know, not every single day. Sometimes I'm doing some work and I'm like, boy, this is just menial. And I've been building record types for as long as record types existed, but I still do enjoy it. And so we're still on a good path, and we're not on a path to do anything other than grow the company, make it someplace that we love to work and where our employees love to work. Mm-hmm. Three tips. All right. So three tips. I did pre-read this, so I did come up with a couple. So I might be reading from my notes here. So the first one would be stick to the market you know, right? One of our challenges in the early days when we started Arcus was, I remember talking to someone who worked at Salesforce. Actually, I'll give him a shout out, Mike Saldi. And I was saying, hey, I'm either thinking about going to work for Salesforce, and I was starting to interview at Salesforce, or I was going to go start a company. And I was kind of, you know, going back and forth on the two. And so I was talking to him, and he said, he's like, oh, well, you're going to go off and start a company that does nonprofit or not does financial services stuff, because you're coming from financial services. You have 10 years in financial services. And I was like, no, we're going to do everything. We're going to do retail. We're going to do medical. We're going to do whatever we want. And he's like, really? That seems kind of odd. Like, that's not your expertise. I was like, well, Salesforce is a platform. You know, this is, again, 12 years ago. I mean, Salesforce is a platform. Once you can help anybody do it. So when we started, we actually tried to go for everything. We would go down to local restaurants and try to like get them on Salesforce. We would go to one of our first clients was a real estate company. So we really went everywhere and then quickly learned that wasn't really the best idea. The best idea is to stay in your lane, especially now. Back then, again, the world of being a partner in Salesforce was, I like to call it like it was the open gates, right? Salesforce opened these gates. Please, please, partners, come. We know we cannot scale to do the services. Please, everybody come. You know, you're all welcome. And we, you know, back in the day, Salesforce used to pay consulting partners. So if we brought them leads, if we brought them, you know, work, they would pay us. So it was always weird getting a check from Salesforce. And then now, 10 years later, it's the opposite. It's like they're putting up walls and registrations and you have to get certain qualifications and you have to get through certain pieces and you have to pay at certain levels to be a partner on both the nonprofit and for-profit side. And so my advice to the first thing is just stick to what you know in the market. Pick a very, very specific set, you know, because again, Salesforce is so massive. So if you're going to go on the nonprofit side, just don't go into one type of nonprofit. Like, just don't say, oh, nonprofits, right? Of the whatever 40,000 nonprofits that are using Salesforce, think about a smaller niche and then maybe even a localization, right? So that'd be first one. And then I mean, obviously the hardest part of anything is just finding the right people. So you obviously get involved in the community. It is to be a really good Salesforce consultant and a partner, you should be deeply involved in the bigger community. So whether that means, yes, you're going to user groups or hosting them or writing blogs or, on the Twitter or going to user groups or building Dream-Ins or doing whatever it is, like that is authentic to what Salesforce is. And I think it makes everybody better if people do that. There are a lot of partners out there that aren't, right? They're just consulting partners. They're not really part of the community. Sure, they have an AppExchange listing, but they don't really push back into the community in any real way. So I'd say that's something of the second one. And then third, this is a tough one and it's not easy. And there's a lesson we learned very early was create a very high level of transparency around your business and your business practices and what you do with your clients. And that starts everywhere from who you are and the type of project, the way you sell, the way you do your projects, your process for getting people onboarded, all the way through your projects, all the way through your invoicing, your pricing. Just be very transparent around that. It's not easy. I'll tell you, it's not easy to be transparent because there's all this stuff around money and things and stuff like that. But be transparent because it will set you up for success much later. So if you're thinking about, should I be more transparent about this or not? Always try to go to the side of, yes, I'm going to be more transparent. I'm going to build something in that makes this transparent to my client or to Salesforce or to whatever we're doing. Sometimes that gets you into deep trouble because you might need to tell someone on the Salesforce side, an account executive, that what they're trying to sell to your client or your prospect isn't going to fit them, right? It's not a fit. It might not be the right thing for them. And so to be able to stand up and say that and say, hey, this isn't the right thing. This product doesn't fit them or maybe shouldn't be done now. It's not popular, but I think it's better in the long run.
I'm going to take a note of that third point for myself. And I think it's not an easy task in any way, but it's definitely worth a shot. So thank you for that. The number three is a big nugget. So who are your entrepreneurs you look up to for inspiration, apart from Mark? So everybody in Salesforce, of course, likes Mark, but apart from that?
Yeah, so I would say, I did write down three sort of, two are pretty obvious, but I'm a big Apple person. I've followed Apple for longer than I followed Salesforce. So Steve Jobs has always been sort of both, a bit on an entrepreneurial, but just on a leadership way, and the way he in a visionary. So of him from a big picture guy. There's a local, I guess he's a local homegrown, not as big as Steve Jobs, but Gary Vaynerchuk. Author. He's a podcaster. He does videos. He's now turned his entire world from running his dad's wine store to now being a media multimedia. Crazy social person. He's written three books or four or five books. I think I've read three or four. So I really like him and I like some of his way of thinking about things and entrepreneurship. And then, I've recently become pretty obsessed with Elon Musk and his level of leadership and vision and building companies where the mission of the company isn't about the bottom line. It isn't about creating the most amount of wealth for himself or others, but are about something bigger, better, and more important than that. Whether that's sustainable energy or whether that's colonizing multiple planets and having a DR plan for the planet. So he's one of my sort of current obsessions.
Nice. And also Steve Jobs, also the personality, just the person, just how he carried himself. And, even after getting kicked out and doing Pixar, like not saying no. So I also admire him for that.
Yeah. And he was a character. If I've read his biographies, seen the movies.
Me too.
It wasn't always easy to get along. So I would say of all the things that I've heard about him, he wasn't always a nice person. And I don't try to take that part of it. but there is a leadership comes in many ways, and to be loved or hated, you find that you look at some of these big leaders and there's a level of where they are, I guess strong would be the word, but also, lead with both respect or fear and love at the same time.
All right. I know you read a lot and I love to read a lot myself. So any books you would recommend?
Sure. I'll give you four.
Great.
These are ones that I read early on, or some that I've read on. We have called the Arcus Canon at Arcus. So we have actually, I think it's five books that everybody reads when they come on to Arcus. Obviously two are by Benioff, one we're going to talk about later. But this first one is one of the newer additions to the canon, which is Start With Why by Steven Sinek. It's a great way to look at sort of a business from an entrepreneur's standpoint or from just a personal standpoint of building what you do and how you do stuff around your why. So it's a much better way of thinking about a mission statement, but it's sort of saying, what are we trying to do? And having that why, building your why as a company or as a person, allows you, when you're making decisions, every decision you make, whether it's should we put more coffee in the coffee room, or should we get beanbag chairs, or should we fire this client, or sorry, break up with this client, it's just much easier to go back to that why. And if your why is to have world domination, fine. If your why is to make billions of dollars, fine. If your why is to help the earth, fine. But then you can go back to that why and really use it as a guiding post for what you do. The second is by The Dip by Seth Godin. Seth is a huge author. He's written a ton of books. The Dip is really about how to become massively successful in anything you do and becoming the best at that by quitting a lot of the other things you do. So it's about that focus, about that staying right on target to something. I think I've read it two or three times, maybe listened to it one or two more times. It's really about staying focused on the one thing you want to do. If you want to be the best at something, really that focus. And it's really about quitting everything else and physically saying, I'm not going to do these other activities because these are not on my mission to do what I want to do. So if you align those two together, get your why, and then you do the dip, those are good. And then the third one is The Entrepreneur Equation by Carol Roth, not as well known. It's a really good one because it talks about sort of kind of the myths. Well, the next one's a myth, but it talks about, why do you want to be an entrepreneur? Like, why do you want to run your own company? And because there's a lot of things like, oh, I get all the freedom. One of the great things she says in the book is, you go from having one boss, right? You work at a company, maybe you have two bosses, you have dotted lines or something terrible like that. But you go from having one boss, you're like, oh, I'm going to be my own boss because I'm going to own my own company. And the reality is you go from having one boss to having hundreds of bosses, because guess what? Every one of your partners is your boss. Your partners, like, Salesforce and all that. Then your other partners, my two other partners, they're my boss. Oh, then all my clients, they're my bosses. Oh, and guess what? All my employees, they're my boss, because I'm responsible to all of them. So instead of just having to report up to one person and being, going into that, going into that daily status meeting report and going, here's what I'm working on today. I now have to report to everybody. And so it's tough. So The Entrepreneur Equation, really good. And then the last one's the one I read this year, The Charisma Myth by Olivia Fox Cabane, I don't know how to pronounce that, really talks about how to build in things into your sort of the way you interact with other people to build your charisma. And a lot of it comes down to stuff that everybody's struggling with nowadays, which is focus and eye contact and stuff. She goes deeply into it, including activities you can do. Fascinating book. Some great, great stuff in there. So those are the three not off the top of my head, but the three I would suggest.
First two books I also knew, but the second two sound interesting and I will check them out definitely. Last, I personally love quotes. I also like writing. That's why, do you have a favorite quote that would you like?
So I have a new favorite quote and I have an old favorite quote. So my new favorite quote came from Dreamforce, watching Barack Obama speak this year, which this was my 13th Dreamforce in a row. So, but I thought it was really my best, my favorite one of all of them, and primarily because I got to see Tim Cook and Barack Obama speak. But his quote of be kind and be useful, which is what he tells his kids, is, I think it's great. That I don't really have any tattoos, but if we're going to get a tattoo, like Post Malone, right across my forehead or on my eye, it's like, be kind and be useful. Like, that's great. So that one I think is awesome. And then, because Steve Jobs, he said this in 1997. So, wow, long time. But focus is about saying no. And I love that. I love, you know, again, a lot of, when we talk about productivity and stuff, that's an amazing, powerful thing. And the way he sort of went to product design wasn't about going out and asking everybody what they wanted. He sort of built the product and said, here's what you do want. I'm giving you what you want. And it worked out pretty well for him. So those are my two, I mean, of many, many more, but those are two good ones.
Lovely. So before we go into productivity, I have something which is a surprise, which is rapid fire round, which is mostly okay. This or that kind of questions. And I'm just going to throw them at you.
Yep.
All right. You ready? Yeah. Ebooks or hard copy?
Ebooks.
GUI or CLI?
I spend a lot of time on the CLI, on the command line, but I don't spend as much time as I used to. So I'll probably go GUI.
Okay. Windows or Mac?
Mac from the day before it was a Mac.
Tea or coffee?
As I drink my coffee, definitely coffee.
Are you a morning person or a night person?
I am definitely a morning person. I am a 5:30 up and at 'em. And if you try to talk to me and get me to think in any kind of difficult way after 5:30 at night, you're getting nothing out of me other than, you know, dad jokes.
Your choice of morning routine, meditation, yoga, jogging, working out, or journaling?
My morning routine is really to start off, to get up and to, I work from home. So my commute is, 3 minutes, from the bedroom to the den where I'm sitting here now. And I just, my morning routine is to make some coffee, to come in, and I just start going through my stuff. I start going through whatever came in the night before. Again, I kind of cut off work at a certain point. That's the hardest part to do when you work at home, is just to cut it off and to not be working, you know, because you could work at 11 o'clock. You can work when you wake up in the middle of the night to go pee. You could open up your laptop and, ooh, let me this work. So I try to cut it off. So then I'm sort of just catching up for the day and starting my day off, planning what I'm doing for that day. That's probably my morning routine.
Which city do you like to travel to for business?
For business? Ooh. I went to Chicago a lot this year, the last couple of years. I'm in New York. The answer should be San Francisco, but it's not. So it's maybe about where I want to go next year. I did go to a conference in Amsterdam this year. I guess it's still this year. And that was amazing. So that was great. I'd like to go back to Amsterdam for business.
Well, I already bought the Superbird ticket. You're talking about Your Dreaming. Shout out to all the Your Dreaming people. I was there too. So we missed each other.
So I wasn't at Your Dreaming. Okay. I was there the day of Your Dreaming, but I was actually on my way up to do a race in Sweden, which is another one. And then I came back and I did a conference that was in Amsterdam after the race. So I was trying to do all three. I was trying to do Your Dreaming, then this crazy race, and then back. But the timing just didn't work for the race, the start time of the race.
All right. As a business traveler, which hotel chain is the best value for money?
I don't know if it's the best value for money, but it's the one that I picked, which is Hyatt. I like that Hyatt has everything from, I think they call it Hyatt House, which is like their low end, all the way up to Regency and to, I think, Hyatt Grand, which is their high end. They've got like 7 or 8 levels. My advice on that is just pick a chain, doesn't matter what it is, and just stick with it. You just got to pound that chain. You just get your points. You know, I was just in Oakland a couple weeks ago and went, you know, had tons of points, so could go fly for free and stay for free. But pick one. Don't spread them out over all the ever chain.
Exactly. Last, can Google be dethroned?
Dethroned. Absolutely. Everybody can be dethroned. It's where they get dethroned will be really interesting. But everybody can be thrown. Because if I asked you Microsoft 10 years ago, said, could they be dethroned? Or can Apple be dethroned in iPhones? Or everybody can be dethroned. The ability to come up and to disrupt is, it's just happened over and over again. So to say that someone can't be dethroned is basically ignoring history. Salesforce will be dethroned. Someone will come You know, SAP ran for a long time. Oracle ran for a long time. IBM was a massive powerhouse. Like, you know, these companies still exist, but everybody can be dethroned. Again, as a huge fan of Elon Musk and all he's doing, you know, Big Auto can be dethroned and probably will be. So, yes, even Google can be dethroned.
I would just say ouch for mentioning Salesforce, but yeah, you're right.
Absolutely. I have to be realistic. Yeah. My entire world revolves around this company, this one company. And if I'm looking at the tea leaves and saying that, oh, Salesforce is going to continue to grow at this rate and be, you know, this big and be this market dominator. Again, when I started working with them, they weren't. They dethroned somebody else. So somebody else can certainly come and dethrone them. You know, I have to be realistic. I think, you know, is it how much longer? 20, 30 years, 10, 5? I don't know. But it's definitely going to happen at some point.
Thank you for your answers, Jason. Ladies and gentlemen, that's a wrap of the rapid fire round. And it's also the end of this episode. As you all might know, Jason is a productivity champ and a getting things done fanboy. So we decided to do a productivity special episode, which will be a part 2 coming out in the middle of March. So check this space for more. Thank you for tuning in today. This is your host Ankit, wishing you a nice day. Bye-bye.